Okay. Now I'm looking at the clock. We got through one verse. Yeah, we got through one verse. Don't worry, we'll finish chapter one this time. But I was thinking maybe I should do some Q&A now to make sure that we have some time for questions and answers. Okay? Should I do that? Yeah, and then we'll continue with verse two tomorrow. I brought with the questions from yesterday. So I'll work on some of these questions. And in the meantime, if you have questions from today, please write them down and then give them to the ushers. The ushers will bring them to me. Okay? So one question, this is for me. I hope the people who asked the questions yesterday are here today. Okay, so this person said, you talked about the difference between theistic religions and Buddhism. How would you handle a question such as who created us? In other words, who created the mind and body? Well, you know, just asking the question that way, who created us, that's presupposing that somebody created us, because you're saying, who created us? So I don't think that's a proper question to ask. When you ask the question that way, you're limiting the answer, because you're operating on the assumption that somebody created us. Okay? Actually, nobody created us. Yeah? Our own mind, through the power of our own thoughts, through the power of our own actions or karma, we're the ones who created what we are today. Yeah. So then somebody's going to say, well, who created the universe? Well, nobody created the universe. Don't go on the assumption that somebody created the universe. Yeah. If you look at science, science is, you know, doing research to try and discern the origin of this universe. So science and Buddhism get along quite well. There's a lot of similarities between this. And actually, I'll be talking some more about this at the talk at PKS on faith and inquiry. But, you know, science is inquiring about the origin of this universe. But then, is the origin of this universe the beginning of all existence? I don't think so, because, you know, this universe had to come from causes. So even if you look at it, even if there was a black hole and the Big Bang, those all had causes. So everything had a cause that preceded it. You can't say that there was an initial cause to all existence. You know, maybe at this universe at one time came into existence, and one time it will cease. But there's going to be, and there has been, many, many universes. Okay? So there's no first beginning to all existence. There can't be, because everything that exists depends on causes that came before it. Okay? If somebody's saying there has to be a first beginning to all existence, then you say, good, go find it. You know? Because trying to find the first beginning to all existence is like trying to find the end to the number line. Remember in your math class, the number line? Remember? You know, zero in the middle and negative numbers here, minus one, minus two, and positive numbers here. Is there an end in either direction to the number line? There's no end. If somebody said there has to be an end to the number line, what do you say to them? You say, well, it's fine, you can think that, but good luck finding it. So it's the same if somebody says, oh, there has to be an origin to all existence. Well, sure, you can believe that, but good luck finding it. Yeah? Okay. Then somebody said here, the Buddha talked about heaven and hell, and how can we verify that these realms really exist? Okay, if we look at our own mental state, have you ever been in a hellish mental state? Have you ever been in a state of extreme mental anguish? Yeah, we've all been like that. Can you imagine that mental state manifesting in a physical form as a body and the environment that you live in? That's the hell realm. Okay? It's just a physical appearance of that mental state. Have you ever been in a state of incredible pleasure? You know, lots of sense pleasure, you know, coming your way? Yeah. And we've been delighted like of that. We'll take that mental state and imagine that manifesting as a body and an environment, and that's the heavenly realm. Okay? So just by looking at your own mind and what it's capable of, we can get an idea of the kind of realms that the mind can create. Okay. Then somebody said, oh, I was told that we could have many teachers, but one root guru. How would I know the root guru? What feeling would I have? Well, okay, in Buddhism, it's true, we can have many teachers. We usually have one or sometimes two or even three teachers who are the most important ones to us. So sometimes this is the person who first got us going in the Dharma, who first inspired us to follow the path. Sometimes our root teacher is the one whose Dharma teachings really have the most profound impact on our mind. Yeah. So we're the ones who choose our teachers, and we're the ones who kind of decide who our root teachers are as well. Yeah, we don't have to pressure ourselves to try and figure out who it is, but rather, you know, just the person who, when they teach the Dharma, it just moves us so strongly, more strongly than any other person. That often is the person we call our root guru. Okay, then another question here. I have problems with my anger. How can I practice every day in addition to metta meditation? Well, this is a whole other Dharma talk about how to handle anger. So I'm going to take the easy way out and recommend that you get my book, Working with Anger. Okay. And my book, Working with Anger, was plagiarized from Shanti Deva's book, from this book we're studying, Chapter 6. Okay. So my book, 100% plagiarized, but it has a good source in Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life. So you might find that helpful if you have difficulty with anger. Let me just do a few questions from today as well. Okay, so there's a question. My auntie isn't in good health and is often sick. My children don't do well in study, and my career advancement does not seem smooth. Can I make a prayer request for all three of us? And how much does it cost? It doesn't cost anything. Okay. Yes, you can make prayer requests. Those of us at Shravasti Abbey will be doing prayers at people's requests on Vesak Day on May 12th. So you can sign up and we will certainly do prayers for you. And we don't charge for anything. I mean, this is, I think, one of the beauty in the Buddhist teaching is that everything is done freely. So as monastics, our life is a life of generosity, and we just give with what we do. And what we hope to do is thereby inspire other people to support our lives and to get in touch with their own internal feeling of generosity and to take delight in being generous. Okay, so this person is saying that they're a very devout Buddhist, And they felt that a spirit has attached to their body, so that whenever, so that very often they have a stomach ache and I guess pain in their chest. And they've tried chanting and to get rid of the spirit, but they feel that the spirit is still there. Okay. What I would recommend is doing metta meditation. Do meditation on loving kindness, and especially direct your loving kindness towards the spirit. Okay? So instead of having a hateful, spiteful mind towards other beings who harm us, then cultivate a compassionate heart and really wish them well. So this goes for human beings as well as for any kind of spirits. Generating a heart of love can be very, very effective. I remember one time many years ago, I was in a very kind of, my mood was kind of depressed. I was really kind of moody and not feeling very happy. And there wasn't any good reason for it. And I kind of had a feeling, oh, maybe there's some kind of external interference, some kind of spirit or something. I don't know if there was or not, but I had that thought in my mind. And so then what I started to do is generate loving kindness for that spirit. You know, I didn't know if there was one or not, but I just said, okay, if there's somebody who thinks they're going to be happy by harming me, that person's in a lot of suffering, whether they're a spirit or a human being. And so, you know, I tried to generate loving kindness for them. And then we have this meditation called the taking and giving meditation, where we imagine taking on the suffering of others and giving others our happiness. And I did that meditation, and then it just vanished. The whole bad mood vanished. The whole thing just disappeared. So I don't know, but it worked. So try it. Okay. Okay. So here's there's about 10 questions in here. But what this person's saying is that they're saying, are they right to understand that there's two kinds of phenomena, conditioned and unconditioned phenomena? Yes, there are two kinds, okay? Conditioned phenomena are those that are produced by causes and conditions, so they rise and they cease and they're impermanent. And unconditioned phenomena are things that exist that don't depend on causes and conditions, okay? So they're permanent. They don't necessarily last forever, but they aren't changing moment by moment. Okay? So they're saying conditioned phenomena are like body and mind are impermanent and unsatisfactory, whereas conditioned phenomena, liberation, nirvana, and enlightenment are permanent. Okay, so here we have to clarify some things. So our mind and body, yes, are impermanent. And because they are contaminated phenomena, they're contaminated by the force of ignorance and karma. Therefore, they are by nature suffering. So it's not just the fact that they're impermanent. That alone doesn't make them suffering in nature. Okay? Because the wisdom of the Buddha arises due to causes. It functions. The wisdom of the Buddha, it changes moment by moment, but it's eternal. It never ceases. Okay? So the wisdom of the Buddhas is an impermanent phenomena, but it's certainly not suffering in nature. It's not unsatisfactory in nature. So it's not just that something is conditioned, that alone isn't what makes it unsatisfactory. It's the fact that it's conditioned by ignorance and karma. Okay? So this is relating to yesterday's talk when I talked about the four seals, remember? Okay. And then, okay, liberation is permanent because it's, and so is nirvana, because they're both the emptiness of inherent existence of a mind that is free of attachment. But enlightenment refers more to a state of being, as I understand it. Okay? So I'm not sure whether you would say enlightenment is permanent or impermanent, because enlightenment has both aspects to it. Okay? The enlightened mind, the omniscient mind of the Buddha, is impermanent. Okay? It arises due to causes and conditions. So even though it's eternal, it's changing every moment. But when I was talking about the cessation or the nirvana of a Buddhist mind, that other aspect of Dharmakaya, that aspect is permanent. Okay? So, then this person says, am I right to say that all conditioned and unconditioned phenomena are empty of true existence? Yes, you're right. Okay? And they're saying, this person's also saying that all phenomena are empty and don't have inherent existence. Therefore, they are interdependent and are a result of causes and conditions. Now, here we have to do some refinement. Yes, all phenomena are empty of true existence and therefore they are interdependent. But not all phenomena depend on causes and conditions, because permanent phenomena don't depend on causes and conditions. Only impermanent phenomena do. Okay? Then the person's asking, is enlightenment empty too? Yes. Okay? And then what are the causes and conditions that lead to enlightenment? The causes and conditions are what everything we're studying in this book, The Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. All these bodhisattva practices are the causes that we're creating to actually become a Buddha. Okay? And then they say, please explain the word unconditioned. So it does mean not depend on causes and conditions. Okay? So everything is empty, and everything is interdependent, but it's not necessarily interdependent in the sense of depending on causes and conditions. Because things can also, the permanent phenomena, are interdependent in the sense of having parts, and in the sense of existing depending upon the mind that conceives and labels them. Okay, we'll get into this more when we get to chapter 9. Okay, let's see here. Okay, so there's two questions here. One, how do we practice impermanence? By daily reflection? And will it just be an understanding, if not a realization? So, how do we practice impermanence? I think it's very important, you know, just to remember every day, yes, I'm impermanent, and all these, you know, conventional things that I see around me that function, they're all impermanent too. They're all arising and ceasing, arising and ceasing. Therefore, there's no reason to get attached to anything. So constantly remembering that is a good way to train in impermanence. Also, when we have a problem in our life, when we see that we've gotten attached to something, that we're holding on to something, you know, I want this, I need this, I have to have it, then it's very good at that time to look at the thing that we're attached to and ask ourselves if it's impermanent. Because if it's changing moment to moment, then there's nothing there worth getting attached to. Okay? So this kind of reflection can really help us release our attachment to things. It can also help us release our anger. Because sometimes when we get angry, we think that the person or thing that we're angry at is permanent. You know, so-and-so said this, they're an awful person, they're never going to change. As if they're permanent. But if we remember that people arise due to causes and conditions also, then we see that they're going to change. You know? So then we don't have to always be angry at them. And we'll also see that our own anger can change. Then another way to reflect on anger is to reflect on our own mortality and the fact that we're not going to live forever. Because when we do that, that helps us set our priorities very clear in life. And when we have clear priorities, then our mind is just so clear and comfortable because we know what we want to do because it's important. And if we know what we don't value, what we're going to leave aside. And then when people pressure us to do something, we aren't so influenced by that. We don't feel so insecure because we've already thought very well beforehand what our priorities are and we're really clear on them. So meditation on impermanence, especially our own mortality, can be very effective in that way. Okay, so I think I'm out of time for the questions today. Yeah, so we'll just have a few minutes of meditation and dedication now, and then we will continue tomorrow, okay? And between tomorrow and Thursday, we will finish chapter one, okay? Okay. So let's just spend a moment. Again, coming back to the happiness in our mind because we've been able to hear the Dharma and because we've been able to share the Dharma with so many other people. And so think of the happiness that comes in the mind from contemplating our Buddha potential as we did today, or as from contemplating the benefits of the determination to be free of cyclic existence. Okay? So when we think of our great fortune for having the opportunity to hear these teachings and share them with others, then we realize what positive potential we created as individuals and as a group. So let's then take all that positive potential and dedicate it, send it out into the universe. So you can think of it as light waves radiating from your heart, going in all directions, touching all the living beings, and freeing their minds from all suffering. So we send out our positive potential together with our prayers and dedication, that through our positive actions, may everybody come to see that they have the Buddha nature. May everybody realize and actualize their Buddha nature, removing all the obscurations. May all living beings attain full enlightenment. May they all become sugatas, the ones thus gone to bliss. May they all have the Dharmakaya mind. So through just our one action tonight of listening to teachings, may all these wonderful results come about forever and for all sentient beings. Okay. Good. Well, thank you.